brings up all of their experiences in the book of Numbers, in the book of the wilderness. Okay? For them, it wasn't about numbers, it was about the wilderness. And because they'd rather... Why on earth did we start calling it numbers? Because that's much more fun. Hey, youthful people, you want to do some math or go camping? Which sounds like more fun? Yeah, notice I said young people. Anyway, okay. So, Jewish title for our book is the Judas title. Going too fast and getting tongue-tied. Last time I did that, it got really bad. All right. Wilderness is the Jewish title for our book, Numbers. All right. 40 days and 40 nights. That's really significant, too, okay? 40 days, the number 40 was significant for the Jews because they spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness. So 40 and wilderness, automatic, big connection for them. That was a really prominent time for them. That draws a lot of sort of heart connection for them. But also, Moses... I heard you hit it. There you go. Moses went up on Mount Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights. Right? When he received the law, there on Mount Sinai, God calls him up to Mount Sinai, and he stays there for 40 days and 40 nights. You go off into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights and don't eat, there's something amazing going to happen. Okay? So, this is an amazing encounter. And the Jews, his intended audience, are light bulbs going. I mean, we're burning out light bulbs now. They're going to the store and getting more. Okay? And then, think about this. Satan keeps throwing these things at him. And every time that he pulls a response at it, he pulls it out of Deuteronomy. Most people can't hardly spell Deuteronomy, let alone quote it. And Jesus is throwing back these absolutely rock-hard responses out of Deuteronomy, Moses' last will and testament. Okay, so this is a really powerful response. This is a very, very Mosaic response. This whole thing to the Jew, which was the intended audience, is really incredibly loaded. This is their culture just funneled into one person who is doing it all. This is like G.I. Joe right here eating apple pie from Uncle Sam's pickup truck right there with grandma's apple pies baked in a special oven made by Rosie the Riveter, okay? It couldn't be more American. This is the same thing. This couldn't be more Jewish. And there's the young people are like, Rosie who? Okay. So then we get to Jesus. Jesus began to preach and say, all right, this is all about context. All right? This is all about context because we find out at this point that John the Baptist had been put in prison. It says, Now when Jesus heard that John the Baptist had been put in prison, he departed Galilee, and leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the sea, in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali, that it might be fulfilled, which is spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light, and upon those who sat in the region of shadow of death, light has dawned. From that time, Jesus began to preach and say, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Okay? So, we find out that John the Baptist has been put in prison. Jesus leaves Nazareth of Galilee and goes to Capernaum. And this fulfills Isaiah 9, 1 and 2. We've got another fulfillment of prophecy here. Okay, again, rich cultural funneling going right into Jesus here. Now, because most of us aren't familiar with those lands, and they don't ever talk about these on the news right now because really they hardly exist in the same places and that kind of thing anymore, let's look at some maps really quickly here. I can get here easier than I can stepping over all the musical instruments. Okay, we've got Jerusalem right here down in the lower part, just on the west side of the Dead Sea. And you go up north, straight north, right above the A in Galilee, you see Nazareth. And then you go to the Sea of Galilee, and what would be about 11 o'clock on the Sea of Galilee, you have Capernaum. Okay? Now let's look at the next map, and it makes it real clear. Over here we've got Nazareth. Okay? And then way up at 11 o'clock on the Sea of Galilee, you've got Capernaum. And you can see where Bethsaida is and Magdala, which may be from whence Mary Magdalene came. That may be where we get the word Magdalene. And Gergesa, where we might get the origin of the Gergesene demoniac. And then one more map. All right, Nazareth and the land of Zebulun and Capernaum and the land of Naphtali. These were the ancient divisions when when Jacob / Israel divided up all the lands and they all went to his sons. Zebulun, one of his sons, got this land, and Naphtali got this land. Okay? So, in the land of Zebulun and Naphtali. Okay. So, getting back to my notes here. Excuse me for a second. Pardon me. So now we get to one outline of the Sermon on the Mount. We're on part two now. All right, and I say, oh, excuse me, I skipped a slide. All right, the Sermon on the Mount. And the key verse for the Sermon on the Mount is, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill." Okay? Jesus says this in the very first part of the Sermon on, it's Matthew 5:17. He says this in the very first part of the Sermon on the Mount. "Don't think I come to abolish the law. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill the law." Okay? There are people who are thinking that Jesus came and he's like, "You know what? You remember where the law says that? Forget that. Don't worry about that. That's not important." He is saying entirely the opposite. "I have not come to abolish the law. I have come to fulfill it." Okay? And as we move through the Sermon on the Mount and talk about it, you'll see this theme replayed over and over again. He takes the law, and rather than saying, "Forget about that," he one-ups it. All right? So, one outline of the sermon. Now, I want you to keep in mind here, I say one outline, because this is one way of looking at it. There's lots of ways of looking at it. Somebody else will come along. The second is the Beatitudes. We have a brief little passage where Jesus talks about the salt and the light. He says, "You are the salt and the light." And then we have how Christ fulfills the law. Okay? I am going to move through this so quick. You're going to think, "God, he's not doing justice to any of this." I'm not preaching on this. I'm giving an overview of all this material. Okay? So, the Beatitudes. All right. The Beatitudes, the Beatitudes are book endings themselves. If we look at the book, or if we look at the Beatitudes, as they start, the very first book ending says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And the very last beatitude says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Very clear beginning, very clear end, because they have the same ornamented structure. Okay? Now, this is also a really common kind of thing in Hebrew literature. All right? The this is a typical kind of blessed are those, blessed are they, blessed are you. This is a kind of Jewish prayer. For Jesus to stand up there and say this, people would have just been going right along with it. They would have been like, yeah, okay, all right. Now, the one thing that's very different about it is that all of them all of them look forward in the future. Okay? They're not present. They're a future event. Okay? They anticipate a future reward. So they shall be comforted. They shall have this in the future. If you look at Psalm 1, blessed is the man who walks in the way of righteousness. He is like a tree planted by strong waters. Okay? This is an extended version of the same thing. It's basically, Psalm 1 is a beatitude. Okay? It's one example of this very typical kind of Jewish literary structure. Okay? So the Jews would have been right all alongside it, but this is all future things. Okay? All right. So let's move on to the next part of the Sermon on the Mount, the antitheses. All right? The antitheses. Let's see. Actually, I want to back up for just a second, because Jesus talks about the salt and the earth, and he basically says you are the salt and the light. Okay, we've heard lots of sermons on those, probably, and I'm not really going to talk about that, but I do want to think, or what I do want to look at that passage where Jesus says, do not think that I came to destroy the law and the prophets. I do not come to destroy, but fulfill. Assuredly, I say to you, heaven and earth shall not pass away, not one jot or tittle by no means will pass away till all the law is fulfilled. Okay? Jot and tittle is basically one way of saying the smallest characters. Jot is basically their way of saying yod, which is basically, it looks like an apostrophe. It's a very small little character. The tittle was basically just the slightest little line under a consonant that made a vowel. It's the smallest vowel they had. I mean, it was basically, not the smallest little marks in your book will be erased. Okay? And for them, this was a profound thing. I'm not here to undo anything. And in order to really ramp that up and say, you want to know how much I'm not here to undo anything? Let's look at this. The antitheses. The antitheses are six statements which follow the form or the format or the formula of, you have heard it said, blah, but I say to you, for example, you have heard it said, to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be in danger of judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Rakah, shall be in danger of the council. Whoever says to you, fool, shall be in danger of the fires of hell. Okay? That's just one example. The other topics are murder, adultery, divorce, oaths, an eye for an eye, and loving your neighbor. And with each of these, Jesus says, you've heard it said, which essentially means Scripture says this. And everybody says, of course. Tradition. Okay? And Jesus says, yes, but you say, we got to do this. I say you have to do this plus. You think that you only have to, you know, not kill your brother. I say if you call him a fool, you're in danger of the fires of hell. All right? He's taking what they hold and raising it up. He's raising the bar. These are all examples of how Jesus has not abolished but fulfilled the law. Okay, he is not just leaving it as he's not wiping it away by any stretch of the imagination. The law still stands. He's actually ratcheting it up. Right now, it's getting more strict. Okay. Let's go on to the acts of piety. All right. This is the section which we hear, typically we have this read on Ash Wednesday. It starts with Matthew chapter 6. So we're in chapter 6 now, if you're following along. And it's when you do your charitable deeds, or when you give alms, and when you pray, and when you fast, this is how you ought to do it. But when Jesus does it, he gives a corrective teaching on each of these topics. Okay? It's similar to the antitheses. Basically, it's not so formulaic in its structure, but he basically says, you've seen people pray this way. No. Pray this way. The scribes and the Pharisees and the Sadducees give alms this way. They make this huge big deal. They're like, hey, I'm giving tithes. Everybody pay attention to how awesome I am. No. Don't do that. Okay? You know, people fast and they do these horrible things to themselves. They're like, oh, look at how awesomely holy I am. I've been fasting for 6 hours, and do I have circles under my eyes? I think my gums are receding. Oh, I'll be okay. It's all for the Lord. You know, the Lord's like gagging himself. Okay? And Jesus is saying, you've seen people do this. Don't do that. This is what you need to be doing. Okay? So really, he's talking about now not your behavior. Well, it is sort of your behavior, but it's these acts of piety, these acts of faithfulness, how we live out our faith, not in terms of our ethical behavior towards others, but in terms of our prayer life and our spiritual life towards the Lord, and how we manifest that in front of other people. Okay? And in the teaching on prayer, at the end, he gets into a talk about forgiveness, which is he puts a real big spin on that, because the Jews had this idea about, you know, sacrificing animals for forgiveness, and he changes that up a bit. All right, then we get into the hard section, okay? We get into the other teachings. I will admit, this is a hodgepodge. There's no real clear unifying element that holds this section together. What is clear is the unit that comes before it is really cohesive. It's obviously a strong unit that binds together well. And the unit that comes after it is a real clear unit that goes together well. And this is the et cetera portion, okay? But that being said, this section is very reminiscent of Jewish wisdom literature, especially Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Okay? This is like the Proverbs section. Okay? This goes from basically 6:19 to, I think, 7:12. 7:12. So this, it's kind of a hodgepodge. It just comes together in very different, eclectic passages that almost reads like I said, Proverbs or Ecclesiastes. However, it does contain really beautiful passages. This is not by any stretch of the imagination to disregard these or minimize their value, because this has the passage about not worrying, where it talks about, truly I say to you, neither Solomon in all his glory was clothed as one such as these. It also has a passage about the golden rule, essentially summarizing the prophets. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets.